Welcome to another episode of the Solari Wellness Series. This is Brigitte Moucher, and I'm talking today with Sarika Cernohaus. Sarika is a doctor of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. She teaches nutrition at the master's level and is on the board for the National Association of Nutrition Professionals. She's a coach for Metabolic Balance of Germany and a chapter leader for the Weston A. Price Foundation. Sarika is also a Solari subscriber who originally contacted me from my wellness platform. Sarika, welcome to the Solari Wellness Series.
Brigitte, I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. So today we are going to talk about a very down-to-earth topic, healthy nutrition on a budget. So what I like about Sarika as a nutritionist is that she combines knowledge and wisdom from Chinese medicine, Ayurveda as well, I think, and traditional foods to create a very interesting way of cooking and eating that is not boring and not too complicated either. Sarika wrote a book, The Funky Kitchen, so you get an idea of what she likes. And that book is a user-friendly book about traditional foods. It's more about techniques and why we would want to do that. So when times are uncertain, we want to be able to eat healthy food no matter what, right? And that's why we chose to discuss how to have a healthy diet and a healthy and nutritious diet on a budget. We'll share some of the most important ways to stay healthy through nutrition. That means having plenty of energy, a healthy weight, a good digestion, and a strong immune system. And if we have time, we'll also touch on the best medicinal foods and herbs. And while we talk about all this, let's keep in mind that we may not have an unlimited budget for food and supplements. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to be able to highlight what is absolutely necessary versus what's nice to have or not necessary at all. So Sarika, where shall we start?
Goodness. You know, this, I love that we are talking about this because this year that we all lived through in 2020 really was very taxing on our sense of feeling grounded and our certainty of what the next day would bring. You know, the apple cart was overturned, wasn't it? It was quite a mess.
Yeah, definitely.
And the interesting thing was, I remember looking at a lot of what was being fed to people in media and social media. And it was this kind of like Netflix and chill sort of language of, you know, people just staying home and drinking wine and, you know, binging on Netflix series. And it was a very strange message to put out to people who are in a stress state. It was really one of the lowest options of, you know, how we can direct people societally of how to look after themselves, you know, to be kind of half drunk and, you know, plugged into something, you know, on the television.
Yeah, which is really like escaping.
Reaction. It's totally escaping. Yeah. Yes. It's not putting you into a position of creation. It's a very reactionary position that really over time is going to deplete you. It is going to continue to make your situation worse, even if everything else is starting to perk up again. So I feel like for many people, it was a very peculiar year in that regard. And I heard about a lot of people putting on weight. And then of course, seeing also the depression and anxiety that families and people on their own terms felt as their lives were overturned. And it became very clear to me immediately how important it was for people to be sure to use nutrition as a means of grounding themselves, helping to, you know, right their ship in these uncharted waters.
Absolutely.
And Yeah, really a huge deal. And, you know, in the nutrition class that I teach, the thing that I, because we talk even about fasting in our nutrition class, mm-hmm. and the thing that I think about that is, even if you're choosing to not eat, we always have a thought of food on our minds, and we make decisions around food, even if it means that we're going to do a fast, something along those lines. We're still thinking about that. We're still using food as a tool, or not eating as a tool. And so it is something that we deal with every day. And just as what it is that we are taking in through the nutrition of what we listen to, what we see, what we feel on our bodies, that's another level of nutrition. And that's incredibly important. This very physical activity of eating is something that has a very connected to the earth capacity that really does help to ground us. I know we've said that like three times already in this discussion. Yeah. So it is something that we can use to create greater harmony within this temple that we reside in, our bodies.
Absolutely.
And so the Netflix and chill approach is something that doesn't serve us. It might be an escape and it might feel pretty good for a short window of time, but pretty quickly the returns on that get to diminishing. Mm-hmm. And so whatever we can do to give us that sense of nourishment, that sense of grounding is really impactful. Now, we came into this, Brigitte, I would say from my many years of working in natural medicine and being very interested in nutrition, I've seen the confusion that shows up in people's lives regularly around what to eat. Is this good for me? Is this going to make me fat? Is this going to make me happy? Confusion around when to eat. Confusion around why to eat something. Mm-hmm. So this innate understanding within ourselves of what these signals are in terms of what we need, that is something that I would say the vast majority of people were removed from, maybe even never knew about, going into this challenging last year that we're still dealing with. You know, I feel like so many people came into this situation not prepared in many levels for mm-hmm. what was foisted upon them and how to surf those waters in a way that would best serve them.
Yes, absolutely. And I would like to say as well that in terms of diet, you know, there is no one size fits all as well, right? No. We are all different. There are different types. And so how do we know what's right for us?
And that's such a tough question. It really is such a challenging situation when we don't have that inner knowing of what we need on a given day, because it changes, right? I mean, depending on what your activity level is, how your sleep was the night before, potential stress situations that are happening within your home with other family members, where you are hormonally, all of these have an impact on what's going to show up as the right food for you to eat at your next meal.
Yes.
And so I'm just saying all of this to honor how tough that can be to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in my mind, the simplest thing that we can do is to work with foods in a format that are closest to their original format. Mm-hmm. So what many of us, I was born in 1971, I grew up in a snacking and fast food environment. That's what that was for me. And societally, we grew up in a processed snacking food environment, at least in the United States. And I've seen what we have done around nutrition bleed out to other countries and cultures around the world. So as I began to really look at nutrition a number of years ago, what I found the most centering and grounding of all the things that I felt confused about, mm-hmm. was moving back to working with nutrition that is close to its original format. So what that means is having, let's say, a bowl of organic oatmeal as opposed to a bowl of Cheerios. Now, they both are made from oats. However, the processing that happens on the Cheerios is something that turns it into a food that is going to really raise the blood sugar, is not going to have a stabilizing effect on the blood sugar, it's not going to give a sense of satiety for many hours following, versus organic oats that have been prepared on the stovetop. So it's the same base food, but they have very different actions on the body. Mm-hmm. Those oats in their whole format that way, they actually are something that are going to give you energy immediately and then a long, slow burn going forward. It's a very different type of activity within the body. Yes. So that's what I mean by dialing back to getting foods to their original source as simply prepared as possible.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. And that's also, that will also make a difference in your food budget, right?
Exactly. And that's the next important part. I'm sure that, you know, your listeners are accustomed to, they maybe have heard this concept of shopping the perimeter of the store, because the perimeter of the store is where you're going to find refrigeration, and it's where you're going to find less processed foods. As you travel up and down those aisles within the store, that's where you get into spending a lot of money on foods that have been highly processed. Mm-hmm. And so much of where those dollars are going to make those Cheerios, let's say I'm picking on General Mills today, so much of why that box costs you $4.50 is because of the marketing that has gone on behind that and the manufacturing facilities, but it's really the marketing that has gone into that. So that's what you're paying for something that does not serve your body. And it's going to cost you more money in the short run and in the long run, mm-hmm. of how that shows up for your health and the way that you actually feel on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So budgetarily, shopping the perimeter of the store where the produce is, where you know, the dairy products are, where the meats are, the fresh meats. All of that, you know, the bulk sections related to whole grains, that is in beans. That's where you're going to be finding these types of foods. Mm-hmm. And they do. They cost you less and they fill you up more. And why do they fill you up more? Because innately, unless we're talking about dairy products and meat and eggs, these foods have a high fiber content generally. Mm-hmm. And that fiber content is something that fills you up immediately and has a long burn on the energy that it gives you. It's not something that's going to really raise your blood sugar and drop you down quickly the way that processed foods do, like white pastas and many of the processed breads and crackers. And of course, you know, not even getting into things like cookies and pastries and things like that, but rather working with something in its whole format that has its innate fatty acid content and fiber content and mineral and vitamin content that's there. Yes. So yes, it ends up costing you less out the gate, and it gives you a longer, more robust, more even energy when you consume those foods. So to me, that's a huge turn right there.
Yes.
It's really, and it's something that I don't, it's something that no matter the budget, that perimeter type of shopping is going to allow you to get more food and food value for your dollar.
Yes, mm-hmm. I totally agree. So do you want to talk about, I know you're a big fan of traditional foods. Do you want to talk about that right now? in terms
of what that is in my mind, traditional foods are foods that it really, a lot of it has to do with the preparation. And that's something that our ancestors did, because, you know, it wasn't until fairly recently that we've had refrigeration and certainly the chemical preservatives, but even canning is kind of a new technology, you know, when you look at the human experience. So the processes that were needed to preserve foods through, you know, winters or periods of fallow where food wasn't as plentiful were ways that really helped the human to survive. Mm-hmm. However, they also had other benefits that made those foods, it changed them. And I will say one of the simplest formats that doesn't necessarily get into the preservation, but does get into being able to use everything, not letting things go to waste, is making soup. Uh-huh. And using soup, and so, you know, many chefs, they will use the trimmings from, you know, carrots and celery and onion and garlic and these types of trimmings that would maybe be used for the entree. That is actually, that can end up in the stock of a soup. So, mm-hmm. you know, or even funky vegetables, you know, things that are getting kind of wilted that wouldn't taste so good to have in a salad or something like that. As long as they're not moldy or slimy, they can be used in, you know, to create a soup so that nothing that way goes to waste. And of course, they release their mineral content, their nutrition content into the broth of the soup. But it's the same thing, Brigitte, related to meats, you know, these tougher, less expensive cuts of meat, certainly the bones, the joints, things that otherwise we would be rather tough to eat or flat out inedible. Mm. When you put them into a soup, you're able to allow that slow cooking to begin to break down, you know, the fibrous content of tough, poor meat cuts, and certainly to release you know, the mineral content and the fatty acid structure and the protein structure of joints and whatnot into the broth itself. Yeah. And that makes an incredibly delicious and nutritious and inexpensive source of nutrition for the body. So in my mind, soup is one of the most fantastic ways to really work with a budget and make that stretch for you.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And then the other techniques that, again, these are perimeter shopping experiences, is fermentation. Mm-hmm. And fermentation might sound like kind of an outlandish concept, you know, to a lot of the listeners. However, it is something that, again, our ancestors, you can go to any continent historically, and these were preservation methods that would take, you know, different roots or other plants, working with grains, working with dairy, and you're harnessing the activity of beneficial bacteria to begin to transform whatever that beginning food was. Mm-hmm. And it makes it something that is very available to the body. And it actually can transform the nutrient value quite extensively. I mean, a quick aside here, on the pirate, the shipping of yore back in the day, Captain Cook, he really paid attention to the sickness that would develop with the different crewmates. You know, being out at open sea without refrigeration, without access to fresh foods for months at a time, it is something that was really an exploration of what that does to the human body. And so he paid attention and was really kind of a scientist about this. And what he found was that the fermentation of cabbage was a way that he was able to keep his crewmates from developing scurvy, which is a tremendous deficiency of vitamin C. Yeah. Vitamin C is generally found in fresh foods. And so when you don't have access to fresh foods for months at a time because you're on the open ocean, that is a tremendous way to develop scurvy. Mm-hmm. And it's a horrible way to die. So he lost a lot of the people who were working for him to this disease. Well, they found that it wasn't just cabbage that would do it. There was something in the fermentation that not only preserved that cabbage and allowed for the crewmates to consume that for, you know, months after they'd left shore, but it prevented the scurvy. And that's because in this fermentation process on cabbage, you take a food, which is the cabbage, that's not inherently super high in vitamin C. Mm-hmm. And in this transformation that occurs, it actually becomes a powerhouse of vitamin C.
I see.
So this is an incredibly inexpensive way. I mean, think about it. A head of cabbage, you could get that for like 98 cents. And that will make you enough, you know, that'll make you like three big jars, you know, quart jars of fermented cabbage, sauerkraut. You just need a good salt and some good water to work with. Mm-hmm. And that is a fantastic way to naturally bring probiotics, which are things that people pay a lot of money for in capsule format. It brings these probiotics naturally into the diet.
Yes.
As well as a little bit of fiber that is very good for the gut health. And of course, you know, the vitamin C that we're talking about here and other nutrients as well. But I mean, what a fantastic thing that is.
Yes. And we can do, we should ferment our vegetables ourselves. I still need to do it myself, but I know you have some good videos teaching how to do that, right?
Well, I do. I have some, but don't take just me for it. My goodness, there are so many formats out there, you know, of others. And this is what I will say. When I first became involved with all of this, the fermentation, the practices that I teach in my book and my class, they were things that were not widely commercially available. And now they are. You know, you go into any natural food store and oftentimes even a standard supermarket. Mm-hmm. And in the refrigerated section, you may find, you know, naturally fermented sauerkraut or kimchi or pickles. So that will allow you to get used to what that texture should be. I think that's an important thing. Mm-hmm. Because let's think about it, Brigitte. When we start working with traditional food preparation methods, it really flies in the face of how we've all been brought up. We've been brought up that, you know, the milk goes into the refrigerator, the veggies go into the refrigerator. We're not used to these concepts of, oh, you prepare something and then you leave it on your counter for a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tough thing. I mean, when you're making yogurt at home, you know, when you do that, I remember the first time I did that, it scared the tar out of me because I thought, I'm taking milk, I'm adding a little culture starter to it, but then I'm putting the whole thing into a warm environment and I'm leaving that there for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And it was a real leap of faith. I didn't know what I was going to get the next morning when I went to check on this yogurt. Yeah. But sure enough, that milk had gone into the jar. It smelled like milk. It looked like milk. It had the texture of milk. And the next morning through the fermentation with the starter culture, it had turned into yogurt. And I was hooked.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So I think it's important for us to become accustomed to what those textures and flavors are so that when we go to try this on our own and we use so many of the great tutorials that are out there, then we're able to say, okay, I'm on the mark, or that was definitely not on the mark.
That's a good point. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then something that I personally like a lot as well, and that's packed with energy, is sprouts, right?
Yes. Sprouts are wonderful. To your point too about, you know, this year that we've lived through, recently here, we had this Suez Canal blockage with a container, a massive cargo ship that wasn't just those multiple thousands of cargo containers, but it was blocking any other access of other ships through this port of commerce for the world. And we had the storm down in Texas, and we see how not prepared people are, you know, for emergencies like this. Mm-hmm. And I've always had those thoughts in my mind for whatever reason. And so, but when I saw these things happen here recently, it encouraged me to up my game a little bit, because we live on a lot that is very shaded by trees. It has poor soil. It's very dry. We live at 7,000 feet in the desert. And so we don't have ideal growing conditions here. Mm-hmm. And we're very dependent on the infrastructure of, you know, people bringing, you know, fresh produce up from farms that are maybe an hour and a half away, this sort of thing. And so what I've really adopted, to your point, is beginning to work more with sprouting and microgreen growth within the house. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
And you can do this, you can do it in small containers, like just ball jars, you know, with different types of seeds. Alfalfa is one of them. And it just requires you kind of keeping an eye on it and treating it the way it likes to be treated. But it is a fabulous way to bring life-giving nutrition, fresh nutrition, mm-hmm. into your diet. And it costs so minimally. Now, the microgreens that I'm doing, there was some startup cost to that, to, you know, get grow lights for within our home, but it wasn't terribly expensive by any means. And I used existing bookcases that we had to set that up, mm-hmm. and just used, you know, plastic trays, and then got the seeds. And so in my mind, working with that sort of thing and making yourself more self-sufficient is going to save you so much money. And of course, if things get really sideways, and these connection structures to bring whatever goods we're needing, mm-hmm. are blocked for some reason, then you are already set up and you're versed in how to look after yourself. But again, it also just saves a lot of money versus buying sprouts out of a plastic container at the grocery store. So yes, I think sprouts are wonderful. And one of the things that I talk about too in the Funky Kitchen, and as a Weston A. Price chapter leader, is the use of soaking and sprouting and fermentation on grains and nuts and seeds and legumes, beans, yeah. as a means to make the nutrition that is stored within those seeds more bioavailable to the human body.
Yes.
And that is such a super simple thing to do. It's not hard. It just requires a little bit of forward thinking.
Yes, honey.
Yep, that's all.
And so, yes, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about next, is how to make sure we have a good functioning digestion, because it's really important. We heard in a previous interview that having a good digestion is important for minimizing oxidative stress. Otherwise, poor digestion creates toxins, and we don't want that, right? So, what can we do to improve digestion? Just what you mentioned, but do we also need to think about food combination and things like that, eating at a certain time, avoiding certain foods, managing our emotions, stress? What's your...
All of it? It's all there. Every last bit of that, Brigitte. I mean, everything. So I'm gonna back it up to the emotional content. And, you know, if you're looking at your phone and you're upset about reading, or you're just engaged with that, you're not giving your attention back over to honoring the meal that you're taking in, or there's just a whole bunch of noise going on around you, if you're really rushed, all of that is going to impede digestion.
Yeah.
We are designed, the way that our nervous systems are designed, we have this yin and yang. It's Chinese medicine right there. We've all seen that symbol of yin and yang. It kind of looks like two, you know, paisleys with little dots on either side. What that represents is that the activity and the more fluid aspect of the human experience, and that these things are always in relationship to one another. So the more yin activity is, the more in Western medicine, we call it parasympathetic. It's more receptive, calm. It's when we rest and digest. versus the yang aspect, which is much more activity, motion. So the one side has more of a female quality. The other side is more of a male quality. It's this sympathetic dominance. It's when we're charging, it's when we're on, and it's not a time of rest and digest. It's a time of reactivity. Yeah. And the issue is that so many people today are more or less always in this yang sympathetic override pattern. One of the things that's very necessary to properly digest your food is to begin to shift into more of a parasympathetic tone. When we do that, we naturally have more saliva, which is full of enzymes that help us to break down carbohydrates. When we see food that appeals to us and we smell it and we are in a more relaxed state, our bodies naturally begin to release hydrochloric acid. Mm-hmm. And that hydrochloric acid is paramount. It is foundational to making sure that we are breaking down protein, that we are breaking down minerals, and that we have this first line of defense against pathogens that may be in that food or the environment. Mm-hmm. And so this, you know, we need to have that relaxed tone. So the emotional content around eating is really a big deal.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, so that's big. But then, what does that look like? Okay, so let's say you're staying committed to that and you're excited about the meal that you're going to be eating. That's wonderful. If a person has impaired digestion, you know, maybe after they eat, they get a lot of bloating and burping and gas and this sort of thing, then again, I would say one of the most foundational things is making sure that when you eat, it's actually a pretty simple meal. You know, if we think of like a standard American lunch of like a fast food cheeseburger with fries and a Coke, that is so many levels of complexity. It's processed foods, it's factory farm meats, it is a lot of
sugar,
simple carbohydrates with poor fats, and you know, it's rough for the body to take in. I'm sorry, you said something?
No, I said it's a lot of sugar as well, right?
And it's a lot of sugar with greasy protein.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really you know, fried foods are very challenging to digest.
Yeah.
So simplicity is really an important component. So I will never be the person to show up in someone's life and say, you shouldn't eat meat or you shouldn't eat bread, you know, this sort of thing. But what we do want to be mindful of is not having too complex of a meal regularly. Mm-hmm. I think of like the Thanksgiving meal. That's a pretty complex meal in America. And thankfully it only happens once a year with some leftovers. So when I say not complex, if there is digestive disturbance, then, you know, not having highly processed carbohydrate breads with meat, that's just not a super good combination. That's going to be tough to digest for most people.
Yeah.
So what would be a better choice would be maybe a small amount of preferably grass-fed beef, and a small amount, you know, 3 to 4 ounces, not overly cooked. That really is tough on the fats that you're paying extra for in a grass-fed product. Mm-hmm. And believe me, those fats are super important, important, because grass-fed and grass-finished beef is actually very high in omega-3 fatty acids, which people normally think of like, oh, I need to eat flax, or I need to eat fish, you know, salmon. You can actually get that from grass-fed, grass-finished beef that's not cooked super hard. So this would be rare beef, you know, on a salad dressed with a little bit of olive oil and maybe, you know, some a good balsamic vinegar or little lemon on that. That's a very nutrient-dense beef-containing lunch. That's something that's really going to give you, you know, something back in terms of nutrition. Mm-hmm. The other thing too, Brigitte, is that I feel that people are not clear on what their full signal is. And again, that's easy to do when you're eating a highly processed diet, because again, it doesn't have the fiber content. That fiber content naturally is going to fill you up faster. Mm-hmm. So that's one part. It's highly concentrated. It's full of chemicals that engage you to want to eat more. I mean, I remember being a kid and eating things like Nabisco's, chicken in a biscuit, crackers or Doritos. And I could eat like the entire package. It was the excitotoxins and the processed nature, and so concentrated. I never felt full eating food like that.
Yeah.
And so that's a really big difference there as well, is making sure that your meal, you know, has some good fiber in it, but then eating to about 70% of what you need and taking a little pause. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is that when you give yourself a little bit of time that way, there are naturally occurring hormones that are going to begin to rise up in your body, that begin to tell your body, I'm actually good. I'm feeling full here.
Yeah.
And so that way you're not overstuffing your system, because as we overstuff this way, it puts such a tremendous burden on the digestive processes all the rest of the way through the belly. So simpler meals, eat to about 70% of fullness, and come into that meal feeling, just allow yourself that it is a time of calm for you. Just give yourself that window of time, even if it's just 10 minutes, honor that for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And what I'd like to add is that it's also important to bring consciousness into the preparation phase of the food. It helps you also to produce those enzymes, I think, the fact of preparing the food yourself and smelling it and all that, which helps with digestion. And and also as a cook, you bring your own energy into the food. So it's a responsibility that you have for, you know, people for whom you're cooking and for yourself as well. And so people who are not aware of energy that's everywhere, they may not realize that, you know, they can put either their stress or their love into the food that they are preparing. And that's also something that it's good to be aware of, right?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I'll be the first to say there have been meals that I have made when I have been stressed. They taste like it. They mm-hmm. taste like the stress, and they show up that way in my body. Like I just was not honoring what was going on there.
Yeah.
And so coming from a person, you know, who more or less walks the talk, what you just said is so true. And coupled with that also is think about the consumption of processed foods, which, you know, I'm not being judgmental, but if you open most people's pantries, they are going to be full of processed foods. Look at the labels, read what's actually in there. I'm not talking about, you know, the the calories and that sort of thing. What I'm talking about is the actual ingredients.
Yeah.
When you are making food yourself, you don't have so much of what you're going to be finding yeah. in that ingredient list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that right there is huge.
Yes, a big mm-hmm. plus. And then do you have any recommendation for people who are, you know, people who are working from home and close to the fridge? Mm-hmm. And how can we not be constantly snacking? Do you have any advice?
Yeah, I do actually. So this is the thing. The human body, until the last 100, 150 years or so, starvation was more the norm mm-hmm. for most humans.
Yeah.
Then, right. And, you know, with the increasing industrialization, with the advent of refrigeration and electricity into the homes, that in the blink of the human development eye, that all really changed. And then, yes, you come into the 1950s and the use of a lot more processed foods that, you know, showed up on the scene. You move into the 1970s where, the marketing companies, Madison Avenue, they really became involved with getting people eating more frequently of these processed foods. And that's where the whole concept around snacking came in. Yeah. And so it's been foisted upon us, and it is something that we have to use our intelligence to override this low-hanging fruit, this fridge that's always, you know, in the next room full of food. We have to override that tendency with our mind. I mean, we really have to, because the human experience was, like I say, it was always starvation. So if there was food plentifully available, and I'm talking food that maybe had a higher sugar content, something that really had a nutrient density to it, we would eat a lot of it. That's what we are hardwired to do because of those times when the food's not available.
Yeah.
So we have to use our minds to kind of keep ourselves in an awareness of giving periods of fallow between meals. Mm-hmm. And that fridge just needs to be a place where you go for nourishment and you stock it full of foods that take care of the future you. Same thing in the pantry. They take care of the future you. They're nutrient dense and they're not going to be empty calories. So that anything that you have in that fridge or that pantry is, no matter what you grabbed, it's something that is going to nourish you. So that's a really important consideration. And then, like I say, using your mind to say, I'm only, so as a metabolic balance practitioner, what I have, and then it's funny, I became a metabolic balance practitioner. And in the years that followed, people really started popularly getting into intermittent fasting, and people do much more than I suggest people do around fasting. Mm-hmm. And they have great success with it. But this idea, you know, if you'll say to somebody, okay, well, you have three meals a day, they'll say, well, that's what I do. Well, people don't realize how much they snack during the day. Yeah. You know, a little bag of almonds there on the desk, you know, some cheese cubes, you know, some grapes, this sort of thing. Every time you go to eat, what happens is your body has to engage every one of the systems to make sure that is safe as you bring it directly into your system, mm-hmm. and that it is humanized into something that can be used. So every time that we eat, while it is something that can nourish us, it's also an incredible oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. And so we have to use our minds to entrain that when we eat, it needs to matter. And then we need to honor that meal with giving our body the opportunity to put that to use, and only give ourselves water between meals and keep it to three eating episodes a day. I mean, plenty of people eat twice or once a day, which when you look at historical practices with humans, I mean, think about it. My goodness, what people had to do to put a meal on the table 200, 300 years ago. I mean, it was such a huge endeavor.
Yeah.
We are so far removed from that.
Yeah.
So this concept of, you know, eating more or less three times a day, snacking in between, this is the low hanging fruit that is part of the illness mm-hmm. that so many people experience. So you have to use your mind until you get to a place where you realize, my gosh, I have no desire to snack. And the thing that's great about that is it will save you money.
Yep.
It will give you back so much more mental energy.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to be a person who had to have a snack in my pocket at all times. I really dealt with hypoglycemia. Mm-hmm. And to now have this emancipation where my body knows how to behave the way a body should behave,
yeah,
and go 5, 6, 7 hours, you know, between meals during the day, have long fasting periods at night. It gives you back so much, and you begin to understand your body's signals as well.
Yeah.
So to me, those are the powerful things to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. And also something I've experienced with is that is really important is, what is the first food you eat in your day? If you start the day for breakfast with with carbs or any mm-hmm. sweet things. Mm-hmm. I at least for me, then I want to eat the whole day.
Oh, but yeah.
If I start eating late, like at 11 or noon, mm-hmm. I skip breakfast. Mm-hmm. Or if I start with, for instance, eggs and an avocado for breakfast, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. I don't even need to have lunch. I can wait until the evening. So mm-hmm. the food that you start your day with has a big impact on what you will want to eat and how much you will want to eat for the rest of the day. Your experience too?
Oh, absolutely. But again, at first, I love that you said for me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I noticed for me. And what do? When we travel in America, we have the continental breakfast at the hotels, you know, which is like pastry and cold cereal with non-fat milk. I mean, it's just a total glycemic index blast, which does, it sets you up on that roller coaster for the rest of the day. Yeah. However, we also have to honor that sometimes we don't really feel like eating in the morning. And then other times we may feel ravenous. Let's say we had a really stressful day before, but we got a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you wake up the next morning and maybe you just feel like you need some serious nutrition. And yes, it is, you know, a morning to have 3 scrambled eggs and some sourdough toast and some baked apples, you know, and some avocado on that. I mean, that's like a very nutrient dense breakfast. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but there could be, you know, another morning where you wake up and you're like, gosh, I really just feel like having, you know, some tea with cream.
Yeah.
That's really all I want. Or maybe just water. You know, maybe you don't want anything. And so this awareness with ourselves is really important. I would say that in all those instances, you know, if you're skipping breakfast or eating really lightly, don't let yourself get to that shaky, hangry, hypoglycemic state before you finally do eat. As you begin to notice your tummy grumbling and food starting to sound like the right thing, go act on that, please. Don't let yourself get to a shaky state. That's not good. It'll put you on that roller coaster of craving for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Your energy will be really bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have to just take ourselves where we are on a given day on those biorhythms.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you have a hard stop really soon. So I don't want to take too much more of your time, and we could go on forever. So I want
to. And I'm happy to come back and do it again because there's, I just feel like we skim the surface here. Yeah. I mean, there's, and what I think would be great is if we could get some questions, you know, from the listeners.
Yeah.
And we can go into that together because I hope folks can see there's a lot of ways we can really approach this. And what it all comes back to is beginning to trust your own internal signals. Amberti, bless us all, but we've really been entrained over the last 100 years or so to not pay attention to what those signals are and to not trust ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's an unearthing for many of us of something much deeper within us that has never been given voice. Or if it was shut down early.
Yeah.
And so this is something that requires patience and inner awareness. But this I know for sure, you know, plugging into Netflix and chill, that's not going to get you there.
Right. Yeah. And we should, if we are totally connected with ourselves, we should be guided to the food that's right for us at that particular time. I'm not
saying exactly it's
not easy to do, but that could be a goal.
It's a huge goal.
Yeah.
It's a huge goal. And, you know, I think one of the issues is that, you know, when we're in, before we understand this and before we've explored what it means to really focus on true whole foods that are in a great format for our bodies and know what that feels like and allow our microbiome to reset and our neurotransmitters that are created, you know, because of our microbiome, you know, to reset mm-hmm. and to move into new places. What happens is, you know, in the early days, you know, we may have a craving for a cheeseburger or a craving for a bag of chips or a craving for ice cream. And it's how I taught myself around that was I dialed it back to saying, okay, with this, what's the base flavor here that I'm going after? Is it the salty?
Yeah.
Is it the sweet? Is it the sour? Mm-hmm. What is the thing here that I'm really looking for? And then begin to look for a whole real food that would satisfy that. So it's not that you're beating yourself up for wanting a cheeseburger, but maybe it's that you're really looking for that deeper nutrition of, you know, the beef. Okay, well, fine. That's fine. No judgment. Just make it a really high quality one so it truly serves you that way.
Yes, that's a very good point. There is always a healthier alternative to what you're craving for.
Yeah. And until we begin to exercise using those types of foods, it's not so clear for us to see, but it's a mental practice that we all can do. We all can do that as we begin to learn what our body's signals are.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, I think that's a good way of ending our first discussion today. And so, Sarika, where can people find you if they are interested in learning more about you and what you're offering?
Oh, thank you. Yes, Naturally Living Today is my website. And I would say that's probably the best place. I have some recipes on there. It's a place where you can kind of see where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. And it's also a place, you know, folks want to connect with me, you can just get my email contact from there. And I would say that's probably the best. And of course, The Funky Kitchen is the book that's out there, and that's available to just have this understanding around traditional food preparation techniques and why they're important and how you do that.
Yes. Okay, great. So Sarika, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It was
my pleasure.
It was a fun conversation, and hopefully we've provided listeners with some new ways to have a healthy and nutritious diet. This is Brigitte Mouchet with the Solari Wellness Series. Thank you for listening, and take good care of yourself, because it's more fun to be well.